Welcome to the big interview on the Friday, January 20th edition of Money Life. We're going far afield on this one. I am joined by Paul Espinosa. He is lead manager at Seafarer Overseas Value Fund, which is ticker symbol SIVLX. And it's one of the top performing emerging markets overseas kinds of funds. It, 5 stars from Morningstar, all the rest. He's also co-manager of the Seafarer Overseas Growth Fund, SIGIX. If you want to learn more about the firm and the funds, seafarerfunds.com. Paul Espinosa, thanks so much for joining me on Money Life.
Thank you, Chuck.
So there has been a lot of talk about, you know, where in the world people want to be investing. And there's a lot of disagreement about whether or not you're finding the best values in emerging markets and what have you, because they've been so beaten up. But you're a value manager. So where in the world are you going for value right now?
Well, there's a lot to find in emerging markets. In fact, I would say actually that I'm very excited about finding even more ideas than I thought I would. If I may speculate as to why that may be, COVID certainly played a role in that EM emerging markets have been cheap for many years now relative to the S&P 500. But COVID really gave us further leg down in terms of valuations. And more importantly, from my perspective as a value manager, the opportunity to find good companies. And why is that? In my opinion, it's because during crises, that's where the good companies shine. You know, if you can find a company that not only survives, but can even gain market share during those difficult times, and a company that is reforming its operations to survive those difficult times, and on top of that, it's trading cheaply, that for a value manager is golden. Well, that's a great opportunity. And these days, following COVID, now we have concerns about a global recession, or at least a global deceleration in GDP. And from my perspective, equivalent to the COVID crisis, again, compresses valuations, and it gives companies an opportunity to shine, to show that they can grow even if the overall economy is not growing as much. You know? So I'm actually keeping busy these days.
Well, in terms of keeping busy, you know, how much are market conditions changing there? How much are market conditions kind of held up? Because even as you talk about COVID, well, we've got, you know, China being a very different COVID situation than the rest of the world. But all of the markets are dealing with fallout from a war that is now approaching its 1-year anniversary. And although it hasn't been as bad as I think people expected it to be, it hasn't exactly been good.
Sure. Two things. I would say, first of all, I agree with you on the point on China. That's a double-edged sword in the sense that, well, first we got Chinese stocks selling down because of the zero COVID policies in the country. And then in the fourth quarter of 2022, this past quarter, we had a rally in Chinese stocks because the country was relaxing those policies. You know? So depending on whether you positioned yourself in terms of, we did this in terms of adding to stocks, existing positions, and as the price came down, we kept adding. And we reaped the benefit of that in the fourth quarter. Beyond that, I would say that emerging markets are a lot more than just about China. No? And so I personally have been looking for ideas for a long time now, focusing the pipeline, the research pipeline, outside of China, because everybody has been so focused on the country that leaves opportunities outside of China where people are not looking. No? So that would include places like the Middle East, Eastern Europe. And in the case of Eastern Europe, that links to what your second point on the invasion of Ukraine. And yes, European stocks, Eastern European stocks, took a hit from that. And interestingly enough, it's not, even though they're not directly involved in the war, the impact is really, interestingly enough, through taxes, actually. Governments are trying to manage the energy crisis that the war has brought on. That means that they subsidize energy, and that means that they then need to collect more taxes to pay for those subsidies. You know? And so we find that many corporates in Eastern Europe, the stock price of those corporates has come down because of the tax pressure. Now, the key there, again, I view that as an opportunity for an investor in that if you can get comfortable with the numbers around the coming tax payments, eventually the market does price that in. No, if you can, then you can then purchase those stocks relatively cheaper, to the extent that the market perhaps overdoes it in terms of those approximations.
I need to ask a question that I only ask occasionally because I don't always speak with managers who are so successful. CFAIR Overseas Value, top 1% of Morningstar's diversified emerging markets funds last year, has outperformed the category dramatically for a while. But I'm wondering, are you drinking from a different water fountain than everybody else? Is there a reason, something that is contributing, like something that you have seen or something that you are doing, or is this long-term bets that are paying off that you rode out tougher times? I mean, what is the secret sauce that is calling for outperformance? Because clearly you're doing something that the average peer in your category isn't.
I've given that question some thought, not quite in those terms, but I have a couple of opinions on that. First of all, to clarify that I have not changed what I do since the fund's conception. That's the first point. The second point then is, well, what do you do? And I would phrase it as, I look for total return. Like you said, I don't look at the benchmark. I don't worry about what other peers are doing or what the benchmark overall is doing. What I look for is total return. And in a way, if I may say, describe it as old school investing, in that I do think dividends are very important. The accumulation of those dividends for years and years do help a lot in offsetting capital losses in any given year, like we had last year, for an investor over the long term. I do focus on cash flows and the payment and return of those cash flows to shareholders. That is different, I think, from the market regime we've had for many years now that has been very focused on growth and on tech companies, you know. And furthermore, I would say that the market has been paying in the last years for growth that was really not quite profitable. It was about just growing the size of the company underwritten by the capital market, not underwritten by profit at the company. That's unwinding. And in contrast to that, I've been doing old school investing where you actually pay for real cash flows and pay for those cash flows being returned to shareholders. So I think that's one important difference. And the last one I would mention is that in addition to total return, I like to focus on companies that really have their own sources of return, meaning of growth and return. I try to minimize the dependence of the stock picks on GDP growth and or overall market sentiment by pursuing a value discipline. One is already disassociating himself or herself from overall market valuations. No, that, in my view, I view that as a safer way to invest. And in terms of the drivers of the business, I try to focus on companies that are really driven by what is happening at the company, what management is doing, as opposed to being exposed to the vagaries of the market or market sentiment. No, you can never fully get away from that. That's operating in the background, but you can minimize it. No, and that's what I try to do.
How much of the risk in emerging markets, but internationally generally right now, how much of it is simply how their central bankers are going to deal with global inflation? How much of it is geopolitical? I mean, if in this country, whenever we're talking about domestic investing, everybody's Fed, inflation. But right. Central bankers in the rest of the world are behind the Fed in dealing with these problems. But yet you've got many more geopolitical issues as well that are kind of immediate concerns. So which comes first in terms of your list of concerns?
Right. Good question. And I would say, well, first of all, I try to avoid all of that. That was, I think, my last point, that when I look for investments and for specific companies, I look for companies that are not necessarily exposed or dependent on the issues you mentioned, or if they are, at least at a minimum. And then to answer your question directly, I would say, well, first of all, I actually, Chuck, disagree with the idea that you pose, which is that foreign central banks are behind the Fed. I think it's actually the other way around. What is the Fed that is behind? Not just behind inflation. Interest rates, as much as they have risen, they're still below inflation. And we're already talking about the peak in Fed rate rises. Imagine that. We still have negative interest rates supporting the U.S. dollar. Look at other currencies in emerging markets specifically. and you find positive real rates in real terms. And that is because the central banks of emerging markets, and again, I'm generalizing, right? You can always find exceptions. But as a general rule, emerging market central banks have raised rates not only above inflation, but ahead of the Fed. And this is rare. And so I get why you said that, Chuck, but this time around, it was different from history. This time around, central banks in EM raised rates ahead of the Fed. And they were more orthodox and more, let's say, keeping to their mandate more better. And so, you know, I think in our last call, actually, we talked about Brazil, that Brazil had raised rates from 2% to, I think it was 12 at that time. Mm-hmm. Right now, Brazilian rates are just below 14%. And ask yourself, where is Brazilian inflation? It's 5, 6% or so. So you have real rates in the 9% range. That is tremendous. That provides tremendous support to the currency and makes me feel much more comfortable about investing in that country and currency, even if Brazil does have its own political turmoil at the moment, no? And in fact, you haven't seen Brazil sell off much despite the political turmoil in the country, I think, because the currency is so well supported by the central bank, no?
Interesting. I wish we had more time to discuss it. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. But Paul, this has been great. So let's do this again down the line, and I'll make sure to ask about Brazil and others first.
Great. Thank you, Chuck.
That's Paul Espinosa. He is lead manager at Seafarer Overseas Value, SIVLX, co-manager of the Seafarer Overseas Growth Fund, SIGIX. To learn more about them, go to seafarerfunds.com. The firm's on Twitter at Seafarer Capital.